Okay. Yatya pariksha durishaba pandunam anupritchati anupurvyena.
Anupurvyena.
The beginning to the end.
The beginning to the end.
Tat.
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 All those.
All those.
Sarvam.
Sarvam.
Fully.
Fully.
Akyatum.
Akyatum.
To describe.
To describe.
Upachakrame.
Upachakrame.
He just prepared himself. Anupurvyena tat sarvam akyatum upachakrame. And on the side number three in the bottom here, we have a little a resource material, HTTP, Hypertext Transfer Protocol, Spoken Sanskrit Punto Day for Deutschland, probably. And it's very nice. You go and put in the words and even it may make a suggestion. Do you mean a long A or a short A? You know? And you can click there and get the exact thing. And it comes back with all kinds of definitions of words. It's a real nice, handy dictionary I found. Okay. And if we just chant the verse again real quick here. Yadya parikshid rishabha pandunam anuprichati anupuravena tatsarvam akyatum upachakrame. So Parikshit's asking, and Sukadeva Goswami is answering. So text number, slide number four, translation. He also prepared himself to reply to all that King Parikshit had inquired from him. Maharaj Parikshit was the best in the dynasty of the Pandus, and thus he was able to ask the right questions from the right person. Okay, purport by Srila Prabhupada. It's a long purport. Maharaj Parikshit asked the many questions, some of them very curiously. So how do we know which ones were asked very curiously? And other ones which were asked more like, maybe like in a more, like sober fashion or something, okay? Maybe Vishnath Chakrabarty says in his purport, to know things as they are, okay? But it is not necessary for the master to answer them in the order of the disciples' inquiries, one after another. But Sukadeva Goswami, experienced teacher that he was, answered all the questions in a systematic way as they were received from the chain of disciplic succession. Okay? And he answered all of them without exception. So for me, it's kind of have this very analogical mind. I just put everything in little machines and little boxes connected up, and it's just my mind works very well that way, you know. And so I try to do the same thing with the Bhagavatam, and just, you know. And so for me, this is I've read before many times, of course, I guess most of us. But for me, it was enlightening here that all these questions are answered, it says. And it says he does them in a systematic way, which maybe doesn't match up with the student's order of the questions. Because some answers, of course, may be, required before other questions can be properly understood. So the teacher may rearrange the things. And it says Sukadeva Goswami is an experienced teacher. So where was he preaching before? Was it in the higher planetary systems or something like that, you know. But he's going to do it. And also, what is his systematic way? Systematic way as they were received from the chain of disciplic succession. So it sounds like his system is also the way they were organized, from how he heard it from his father, Vyasadeva. And of course, in Vyasadeva, he heard it from Narada Muni from Brahma. And now Maharaj Parikshit, he's hearing this conversation between Brahma and Narada Muni. And after hearing their discussion, then he wants to hear how Narada Muni expanded it all like that. Yeah. So very, very, what's the word, fundamental a section in the Bhagavatam, this chapter, and then there'll be two more chapters in the second canto here, and then we'll go ahead to hearing higher, aiming, trying to hear higher materials than were spoken by Vishnu to Brahma in the third canto, like that. And as we were saying that in our fifth canto, we're in the Bhakti Bhai Baba program, we're finishing the fifth canto. Actually, this weekend we finished the fifth canto. Jai! Okay. And we finished it off with, of course, the wonderful chapter on all the hells. And it's every time you go through a course, you can take more effort. So I pointed out before that one of the questions by Sukadeva Maharaj Pariksit, he specifically asks, tell me about the orbits of this universe, the mountains, the planets, the rivers, the oceans, the islands. And it gives exactly the frames that the fifth canto includes. And we're even wondering, why does it talk about all these mountains, trees, and stuff? You know, but it exactly matches this question. So Prabhupada says, and he answered all of them without exception. So it would be a nice program to see where all these questions are answered. Of course, more questions are asked. Suhotra Swami and I think it was Krishna Kshetra and so on, they were trying to do that kind of approach, just looking at the questions being asked in the Bhagavatam and then seeing how the answers were there. I think it went pretty well into maybe about like the third canto or something. Then it started to kind of like have some problem with it. But later on, yeah, it probably picks up again. So this is a nice way to look at the Bhagavatam, the questions being asked. Okay, if we go down here, the next slide then, because this says, thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second canto, eighth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Questions by King Parikrit. So let's go on to slide number 6, if you could, Master. And so these are the three verses describing Sukadeva Goswami's responses to the questions, 27, 28, and today, 29. Sukadeva Goswami said, thus, Sukadeva Goswami, being invited by Maharaj Pariksit to speak on topics of the Supreme of Lord Sri Krishna with the devotees, was very much pleased. He began to reply to the inquiries of Maharaj Pariksit by saying that the science of the personality of Godhead was spoken first by the Lord himself to Brahma when he was first born. Srimad Bhagavatam is a supplementary Vedic literature, and it is just in pursuance of the Vedas. And today, he also prepared himself to reply to all that King Pariksit had inquired from him. Maharaj Pariksit was the best in the dynasty of the Pandus, and thus he was able to ask the right questions from the right person. So, of course, that last part, not really in the purport, in the translation, I don't think, in Sanskrit. But, of course, it's a very important point, you know, that you have to ask the right questions, you know, from the right person. So again and again and again and again, we see in the Bhagavatam that it starts off by, the qualifications of the speaker are first glorified, illuminated, you know, highlighted by the person asking the questions. So even the person who's being questioned, he can put himself in the proper mindset in terms of what's being expected of him. Yeah. And then when he answers, he then glorifies the person who asked the question, the questions, and gives a proper perspective, and the student can put himself properly. You know. And the transmission of knowledge is very, very, very efficient like that. I remember one time I was trying to understand something about physical nature from Satputa, and it had to do with space perception, which is because space is produced by sound. So it's very interesting because our Western science, you know, Narahariji was talking a lot about this, is highly biased towards vision. If you see all the results when they try and get hard scientific results, data, you always want to see it. If it's a sound, they want to reduce it down to something they can see. You know. So we know from our science that that's third class in terms of a sense perception. First class is hearing, second class is touch, third class is seeing. You know. And so I was wondering about this because there is some literature in science on acoustical perception. If you go to any library and look up the Library of Congress catalog number, BF469, you know, that would be before Freud. BF469, yeah. It'll give you very interesting books if you're into this kind of thing. A lot of cross-cultural studies on sound perception. Very interesting because it's right next door. You know, sound is right next door to the psychological level. So if you can get people to appreciate the acoustical level, they make a big step forward. And we've done this many times in preaching in these universities and stuff. So sound is the subtlest element there, you know. And with a proper orientation then, you know, the communication can be very efficient like that, you know. So Mars Pariksit was able to ask the proper questions to the proper person like that. You know? Yeah. Then, if we go ahead here. Okay, on slide number 7, because right in the very beginning, it said that Sukadeva Goswami was very pleased, you know, to be asked questions about the Supreme Lord and the Association of Devotees. So right from the very beginning, Prabhupada says, actually, bona fide hearing can only take place, you know, amongst devotees and so on. So there's one verse which is, if it's quoted, this is the verse that's quoted many times what we see. And it's Kapila Dev, 325:25. So Kapila Dev is talking to his mother, or his mother is talking to Kapila Dev. Probably at this point, maybe Devahuti is, you know, glorifying Lord Kapila's instructions. And Satang prasangat, satam prasangan, mamavirya samvedo, bhavanti hrit karna, rasayana kataha, tajjoshanad as apabarga vartmani, shraddha, ratir, bhaktir, anukramishati. So the satangs are the devotees, and prasangan is sangha, yeah. Mamabirya samvedo. So I guess topics about me or something like that. Bhavanti, it does develop. Hrit, karna, maybe heart, ear. Vasayana, kataha, very tasteful discussions. Tajjoshanad as apavargavartmani. So if we go to the next slide, number 8. Go down, Master. Okay. In the association of pure devotees, discussions of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation. Thereafter he is liberated, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Apavargavartmani, on the path of liberation, shraddha, firm faith, rati, attraction, bhakti, devotion, anukramishati, will follow in order. So, of course, super famous verse, maybe the most famous verse, is the one at the end of the western wave, western part of the ocean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Ado Shraddha Sadhu Sangha Bhajana Kriya Anartha Nivritti Nishta. So we have maybe Shraddha is Nishta, firm faith, Nishta. Ruchi, okay, attraction. Asaktis, attachment, and Bhava and Prema. Like that. So this is the point. And looking at them, I wasn't able to review all of them, like, you know, but Mars Pariksit's questions. Again, Prabhupada says that, you know, we've heard this before, and Gary Gobran was saying this, that the Bhagavatam starts up philosophically and historically where the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita stop. You know? And so the beginning we find very, very Upanishadic language in the Bhagavatam, Adhoksaja, you know, Akhilyatma, you know, it's describing Krishna Vasudev, he who resides everywhere, like that. When Krishna enters Dwarka, there's some very some sentiments which seem a little bit above the more like dasya rasa of Bhishma, or the ladies in Hastinapura when he's leaving. You know? So the beginning is starting off like that, not to scare anybody away with too much personality too quick. So his questions also seem to be like that. He asks, what are the opulences of the great sages and things like that, you know? And later on, of course, when he does come to the 10th canto in his natural development, then when different stories are being related about the kidnapping of Subhadra and, you know, these kind of things, then he does start asking more questions very curiously about why did he do that? Why did that happen? This happened, whatever, you know. He may even be like a little disturbed that Lord Balaram was against the marriage of Arjuna and Subhadra, because if Balaram had foiled it, then Maharaj Pariksit wouldn't have been born. So he may take all these things quite personally, you know, like that. So he actually, what is it? His ancestors participated in all these pastimes. So he's hearing from people who were actually there. What a situation that you were born right after, you know, Krishna disappeared. You know, of course, many devotees, you know, appearing right after Prabhupada's disappearance. You know, but they talk to people who actually were actually there, and they can get cross references and so on. So Maharaj Pariksit was the right person to ask the right person, you know, these questions. And then this very subtle connection between sound, you know. And he can actually then go through these levels of what, of Apavarga, Vartmani, becoming more and more liberated, becomes Vimukti Jnani. He gets wisdom, he gets knowledge, he gets logic, he gets references, absolute references. He builds his logic, you know. And then he goes from being a, you know, Bhakta Mishra Jnani to Bhakta Mishra Jnani Vimukti. It is Upadeshamrita number 10, yeah, and it actually liberated, I remember I was in the Bhaktivedanta Institute over in San Francisco, upstairs, standing behind the conference table, maybe, I don't know, sometime in the day, and suddenly I was struck with this realization that I always was happy, or at least I was never distressed, you know, and it was shocking. And then my mind started, like, you know, when my intelligence tossed this to my mind, or back and forth, it started like examining, wait a second, is that true? You know? I think maybe about 7 years after being a devotee, maybe 9 years. And I saw, yeah, whenever I would become depressed or something like that, then my intelligence would kick in and say, no, this, that, you know, and something. Or, yeah, you're being slack, you're kind of cheating Prabhupada and Krishna, and you're starting to slide, but get it together, act properly, you know. So then I'd be back on the road again, back in the pathway, the Apavarga Vartmani, you know. So that happens when we become advanced. Of course, who's more liberated in their dealings with Krishna? You know, the Raktak, Patrak, Chitrak, or Subal, Sridham, and Bhartapa. Of course, the cowherd boy, the more liberated. And so this liberation goes in different levels like that. Okay, and then as we become free, then we can actually become nishta, and we can actually get a strong, fixed taste, you know, for Mangalarti, for 16 rounds, for Srimad Bhagavatam, for finding a good place of Sankirtan, you know, for the evening program, for learning how to associate with devotees, and so we're fixed in that. And what comes from the nishta, you know, ruchi, you know, attraction, you know, Asaktis, I'm attached, and then Baba. You know? So this is the real process. And I think that these questions by Maharaj Pariksit, it'd be interesting to see where they're answered, if they're all answered by the fifth canto or something, you know. And then if he's more, because some of his questions are just details on the previous questions, but then it seems that he's actually, making more advanced questions as he goes on like that, you know. Okay, let's go ahead then, a little preview, slide number 9. Okay, and slide number 9 is chapter 9, next chapter. If we look at that, what we're going to see is 291. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul in pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. The illusion living entity appears in so many forms offered by the external energy of the Lord while enjoying in the modes of material nature. The encaged living entity misconceives thinking in terms of I and mine. So that was the very first question, right? Does the living entity acquire this body by chance or by some other reason like that? Yeah. In 294 it goes on, O King Parikshit, O King, the personality of Godhead being very much pleased with Lord Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance in Bhakti Yoga, presented his eternal transcendental form before Brahma, and that is the objective goal for purifying the conditioned souls. So because it says that Maharaj Sukadeva Goswami was going to answer this all as Lord Brahma had been instructed by the Lord himself. So next chapter then will describe all of this, how Lord Brahma was doing austerities, how he got darshan of the spiritual world, which I think it says is Goloka, not Goloka, no, sorry, I mean Vaikuntha. Maybe it's way to weep. Yeah. And then, the Lord delivers the four natural verses. Aham evasam evagre nanyadyat sarasaparam paschari touch tasari tasam. So you have a few states of Sophia Aham. Something got to refresh these things. Yeah. And so the whole Bhagavatam is there in four verses, basically. You know, after you get those, with the Paramatma, you can figure everything else out. Everything else will be automatically revealed. You get those four verses down like that. And it's very nice what his description is of the Bhagavatam. So that's what Brahma got. And then after that, next chapter, some more details. But then the third canto, then we're trying to understand what Brahma didn't get, which was the system of the position of Krishna in Dwarka, which Krishna explained to Uddhava before he left his body. And Maitreya heard, and therefore Vidura went to Maitreya and asked him. And after being satisfied, maybe by the fourth canto or something, somewhere maybe the second, maybe the third canto, then Vidura retired, and then Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami just keep on going like that, describing then the children of Manu all the way up to the eighth canto. Then the other 13 Manus in the eighth canto, Aramanu in the ninth canto, and Krishna and Balaram in the 10th canto. And then after that, 11th canto again, disappearance of Krishna, and the Manus after that, the descendants of Aramanu after that. And 12th canto, of course, is the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, summary of Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. So that's kind of the perspective, and now, Maharaj Pariksha has made these very specific questions based upon his previous contact. So today is also Ram Vijay. So we can talk a little bit about the victory of Ram over Ravana. But I don't know, are there any kind of specific questions or comments right now about these topics?
Well, you'll have to give me
I have a question. It's probably
okay, I have an answer.
Well, no, you might not have an answer because
I have an answer. Chat Hare Krishna.
We may have to do that. You may not have an answer, and it's really not that important of a question, but it did cross my mind, so I'm going to ask it. And I'm not in front of my computer right now, but it said in the purport, it referred to Sukadeva Goswami, experienced teacher that he was. Now, I would expect to hear a description of that for someone like, say, Narada Muni, who had so many disciples and such history of teaching. But as far as I can remember with Sukadeva Goswami, that he heard in the womb, and then upon leaving the womb, he just took off, running to the forest, and his father was calling, but he left, and then apparently that there was some further training and studies. And then, again, without any clothes, he shows up at the assembly of the great Vaishnavas at the passing of Maharaj Parikshit, simply wearing the four directions. And the physiognomists acknowledge this is a great, great soul. He's offered the seat. But any thoughts on why the experienced teacher, I would say qualified, but I'm just curious why Prabhupada used the word experienced.
And this just proves that I am an inexperienced teacher because I discussed that precisely in the very last little bit, but I didn't talk about it very much. And he was described as teaching in the palaces of Indra, and sometimes like that, you know. So that's all I know.
Sukadeva Goswami is described as teaching in the palaces of Indra.
I think one place there, when it's describing, when Prabhupada gives the biographies, you know, in the different stages like that, it says sometimes he used to go to the heavenly planets and also, you know, to talk to the demigods, the Bhagavatam.
So this is in between coming from the womb and meeting with the sages.
That's all I know. You know, so I can say, you know, probably can't get much more information than that. Experienced teacher that he was, Brahma, now, Vishnu Rata, Brahma Rata that he was.
Okay, anyway, it just crossed my mind.
Okay, Giri Govardhan made something at this point that, because I have this whole background in the Bhaktivedanta Institute, but he was talking about science a little bit, and I liked your presentation on science. Oh my God, really very nice about destroying the world. Engage in ghastly, horrible activities meant to destroy the world. But that's Kali Yuga, squeeze a toothpaste tube, get everybody out, you know. So, Giri Govardhan, he mentioned that all they can do is discover how much they don't know, and they leave it at that. And I was thinking that kind of they don't leave it at that because they invent statistics. And statistics as a whole, you know, incredibly convoluted developed mathematical system to deal with trying to describe reality based upon what you don't know. You know, it's just,
they may acknowledge
based upon a random number, and a random number is a number which you can't random event, and a random event is the outcome of which you can't predict. So they developed this whole incredibly sophisticated system of understanding things based upon neti-neti.
What's disturbing is they may acknowledge what they don't know, but they have no idea that they're never going to know. But if they lead us to believe that in time and with enough money for the research, they will know. That's their sort of modus operandi, is that it's that they will know given enough time, and enough study and enough observation, they're going to uncover all these things for us.
By chance. Yeah. Anyway, let's not disturb them. Let's go on. Okay. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai
Jai Jai Ram.
Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram.
Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram.
Lanka Vijaya Raja Ram.
Lanka Vijaya Raja Ram.
I don't know if I can go into my Hanuman mode here like that.
Please do.
If I do, maybe the ladies will have to cover their ears sometimes like that. Yeah. When Hanuman saw, he's a monkey, he's a gorilla, you know. When he saw how Ravana was mistreating Sita, he started using a lot of bad language about, you know, Ravana's mother and sister and stuff like that, which we have to edit from the text here like that. But you can imagine what a monkey would say, you know, oh my God. Again, Hansaduta told us that Prabhupada said that Hanuman's service was always very nice, but sometimes it was a little gross like that, you know. So, of course, the whole history we know to some degree is that somebody's clicking there in the background. Got their keyboard going over the things. Yeah, clackety clack. So that where to start? One Rakshasa, which is actually a race. And as far as I can tell, they matched up in Western culture to the trolls, because trolls are shape changers, and you know, one maybe like five or six human beings can actually take down a troll. But that's actually the arrangement. You know, maybe, you know, and they eat people. You know. So, the king of the trolls, anyway, this one Rakshasa, he sent his daughter, and she then kind of disturbed this rishi, Vishrava. He said, okay, you want relations, I'll give you a son. And you know, there'll be demons, whatever, rascals. And she started crying. He said, all right, well, one of them will be a great devotee. So Kumbhakarna and Ravana, you know, were the demons, and Vibhishana was a great devotee, like that. And Vibhishana, he was always, you know, like respectful to his older brother, and Ravana was kind of respectful to him. And okay, Vibhishana, just calm down now, and I'll listen to what you have to say a little bit later. You know. And so then, always trying to serve his brother and put him on the right path. You know. And he said, Vibhishana said, living in Lanka was like being a tongue surrounded by sharp teeth. You know, being a devotee of Vishnu in Lanka was like a tongue surrounded by sharp teeth. He always had to walk the line and you know, this and that. And he was born with a few associates, like maybe five associates who were kind of like eternal associates or something. You know? And his wife was Sharma. His wife, Sharma, also followed him. So then Ravana did all his austerities, as we know, and got benedictions that he could not, because Hiranyakasipu was like, you know, bothered by different things. And Ravana, he was like thinking, right, this time let me get rid of, you know, some of these problems. Let me look for the loopholes in the contract that my ancestor missed. You know, he always had the picture. There's Hiranyakasipu on Lord Nrisimhadeva's lap with his intestines being torn out. You know, be a nice advertisement for the device. Shesha Das, in other words, like, you know, don't try and write your own contracts like that. Yeah, next time, buddy, get a lawyer. You know, so Ravana was trying to do that, and he was covered everybody. I can't be defeated by the curses of these people. I can't this and that. And Brahma's giving him everything. So then Brahma said, "Well, what about, you know, invincibility to cockroaches and squirrels? You know, or human beings and monkeys?" So Ravana took it like that, like an insult. I mean, cockroaches and squirrels. Yeah. So he was so proud. That was where he lost it. He snuck it in there. So then, of course, you know, Ravana was going on like this and conquering everybody, even went down to hell, and even he didn't conquer death personified. But the thing was that if death personified could kill him in hell, then because of Brahma's benediction, every other living entity in the universe would also die. So then Yamaraj and death personified kind of withdrew. And they didn't you know, surrender to Ravana, but he took this close enough and kind of laughed and headed back to Lanka, which he'd taken away from Kuvera. And he was traveling in his kind of like, you know, convertible Cadillac and picking up beautiful girls here and there everywhere along the way and tossing them in the back, and they were all wailing and crying. And this went on for some time, of course. And the human beings didn't really bother with them. It's like if you see some ants in your house, okay, to brush them away or, you know. So the human beings, he didn't really care about them so much. So Maharaj Dasharatha was maintaining the world and Mayoji pretty well. But then the demigods, they sent Mantara, the hunchback, to agitate Kaikeyi to create this whole problem like that. Because how did it come in like that? Well, she actually was an apsara, simply the demigods to create this problem. And she did her job, you know. So Ram was banished to the forest. And then, you know, while Ram was, you know, distracted from his ashram by Marich in the form of a deer. And then they did this plan, you know, he screamed out, and the voice sounded like Ram. And Sita was bewildered by this. So she told Lakshman to go and say Ram. And he said, don't worry, he's okay, you know. So she made a mistake. Maybe again, an example of a lady, you know, not having proper intelligence, like Chitraketu and Lord Shiva and Parvati. So she misunderstood that, you know, somehow or other she panicked that he's not going to go. So she said, oh, you've always wanted to enjoy me. You know, now that Ram is dying, you can let him die so you can enjoy me. So, of course, this was heavy. She was using heavy, and she may not even believe that, but she was like, using that to drive Lakshman to go and to save Ram, because she thought she knew better than Guru. It's interesting, huh? She thought she knew better how to deal with the situation than Lakshman, who's Guru. And all this problem was created by trying to serve God directly rather than, you know, through guru. Yeah. And Lakshman later on apologized, you know, he was saying, I mean, but maybe I shouldn't have done that, you know. But he was really pushed, you know. So anyway, he left her, and then Ravana kidnapped her. And when she was kidnapped, she was screaming out, crying out, Ram, Lakshman, Ram, Lakshman, you know. And it's, and everybody wanted to help her, the deer, the squirrels, the demigods, you know. But they were afraid of Ravana, afraid of Ravana. And her cries were so piteous and so heartbreaking. It's like if we heard them, we would just like collapse on the ground, you know, hearing the, how piteous they were like that. But it said that the entire universe went off of its axis of rotation like that because of the her cries like that and so on. So Ravana left and everybody is lamenting and anxiety. And Brahma is saying, yes, yes, it's horrible. He said, but our purpose is served. Ravana is a dead man. Like that. And that was it. It was finished at that point. You know? Of course, if he returned Sita, okay, but then that would have put everything in the proper perspective like that. You know? So then, of course, he took Sita. And then eventually, with the help of the Banaras, the forest dwellers, Ram, you know, and Hanuman Prashak, he found the location of Sita. And then they tried to figure out how to go there. Because they had, when it was first counting, when Ravana was starting to count the number of monkeys, it was like 10 to the power of 1 times 10 to the power of 2 times 10 to the power of 3. Our Buddhas times Krishkaris times Kapkukupis. It goes on and on like that. And it's like, you know, it's more monkeys than you have bacteria in your kitchen sink, you know, after not washing it for 3 years or something. It is like, even Ravana was shocked. You know, it was like a lot of them. Of course, again, this is not fairy tale. This is all during the Treta Yuga. And everything was much bigger then, bigger and more accommodating. So there were many more, you know, possibilities for people, monkeys, and rakshasas. So finally, the ocean personified submitted and made the bridge, and they went there. And then they put themselves, I think, on Trikuta Mountain. So they were looking down at Ravana's palace, and like Ravana could see Ram. And then that, and he even just at the very end, he told him, please just give my wife back and come under my jurisdiction, and I'll forgive you, and everything will be okay. You know, but Ravana wouldn't do it. So many things happening. We only have 9 minutes here. Sugriva was so upset that he jumped right across, I think, to the some point there before the battle started or that night before, and started engaging in a wrestling match with Ravana, and he fell down in front of the palace by the moat. And it did pretty good, you know. But then Ravana started to use some magic, and Sugriva had to, like, you know, get out of there quick. And Ram chastised him and said, you shouldn't have done that without my permission. And Sugriva said, I just couldn't control myself, and I saw that rascal there, you know, so on. So then Ram divided them up, and Hanuman at one gate, and different people like that, and they had a formation. And the battle began, and you know, they had gigantic, powerful monkeys. And Ravana was thinking, this will be a bunch of monkeys. What's this? You know, and so on. Although the back of his mind was the benediction there. So it was going on like that. And they were surprised that the Vanaras had, you know, warriors like Mainda and Vidvida and so many people, Nila, Gandhamadan, who could smash, you know, Prahashta and all these people like that. So it was going on for some time. And Ravana was sending more and more warriors out, and they were getting one after another smashed and annihilated. So finally, Indrajit joined the battle, and he was using so much magic, and finally he subdued, he punched a hole in Lakshman, so Hanuman had to go to the Himalayas, of course, to get the herbs. And he brought back the entire thing. You know, one description is he couldn't figure out which herb was the right one, so he said, okay, I'll bring back the entire mountain, but I'm sure to get the right one. So here's an example of his service, a little gross. So it went on like that, then Lakshman killed Indrajit, you know, depriving him of his power. And Ram and Ravan had a fight. You know, they actually had it out one time. And Ravan used one of his most powerful weapons, and I think it knocked Ram to the ground like that. And the demigods were really worried. But Ram was able to recover And that was really encouraging because everybody knew that was one of Ravana's most powerful weapons. And if Ram survived that, he was doing well, you know. So it was going on like this, and this battle was really intense. It says that the battle between Ram and Ravana can only be compared to the battle between Ram and Ravana. It was incredible. Shastra, Rama Shastra Bhattamaham. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, among wielders of weapons, I am Ram. Rama Shastra Bhattamaham. So might even look at it, but even Krishna doesn't portray the full power of his heroic and astra manipulating power, except in the form of Ram. When Bharata went to the cottage to try and get Ram to come back, he looked in their cottage, and Ram and Sita and Lakshman were absent. But at one end of the cottage was a sacrificial fire burning, and next to it was Ram's bow. And it said his bow was throbbing with inconceivable, ruthless energy. So you can imagine, just sitting there, you know, kill, 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 kill. It's like, it's only one consciousness. And I've heard that it was the Gada, and the Gada is transformed into the bow. And that's, it just does simple things like that. You know, devotee, one-minded devotee, like that. I don't negotiate Prabhu, you know, like that. So, Hanuman, Vanaras, again, a description that Prabhupada says that Hanuman wasn't able to figure out necessarily all the intricacies of what is Dharma and what is Adharma in this situation. So he was just telling the other great apes, he said, well, I don't know, you're kind of maybe losing your enthusiasm for the fight, some of you, and you're wondering about this and that. He said, but I don't necessarily know all these details myself, but all I know is that Ram and Lakshman want this, and that's enough for me. Okay, yeah, they all got behind it too. You know? So following guru, following the person. And as it was going on like this, Ravana was having real problems because his heroes were being defeated one after another. Vibhishan was now giving strategic advice and also helping. So at one point, Indrajit had this suggestion that it was Halloween the next night, All Hallows Evening. That means the night before All Saints Day. So actually it's a very holy time. Anyway, it was something like that. It was some real dark moon night the day before. It only happens once a year. And he could do this sacrifice that would open the gates of hell onto the earth, you know, and allow all the denizens of hell, you know, to enter into the earth sphere like that and wreak havoc. And considering who they were and considering who Ram and Lakshman were, in the end, you know, they would probably end up a little bit better from this activity than Ram would. So even Ravana thought it was pretty drastic, and you know, but they, things were getting tough. So he authorized it. Okay, open the gates of hell. You know? So they started doing the sacrifice in one damned grove, condemned grove, and at midnight, and all this kind of stuff going on. And somehow or other, the news reached the Vanaras, and they were all terrified, and it reached Vibhishan and Ram, and they were also thinking, this is terrible, you know. But Ravana had set up a very, very intense blockade of army to protect this, you know, these sacrificers, and no way they could get through. So they made a decision, okay, we'll have a special forces group. So they had the entire army just at 11:30 just smashed against the Rakshasa army. And yeah, they softened it up just enough so this group of Lakshman, Hanuman, I forget who more, Angada, and about four or five more, and the top heroes made it through, and right behind it, it closed up, and they're going there, and they're fighting like anything, and Indrajit's offering the ghee into the fire, you know, four, three, two, and it's the last ladle of ghee before he gets it. Hanuman jumps over the fire and knocks it out of his hand, you know, and they fought their way back out. And Indrajit knew that was it. He said he couldn't do it again. It blew it, and it's okay. Next day, he went into battle and was killed, I think, like that, you know. So finally, all these things are going back and forth. Kumbhakarna came out. They had to wake him up. He had to run elephants across his stomach because he became a little hungry. when he heard what had happened, they woke him up. There were vats of cognac, Bacardi 151 rum sitting there, and, you know, dead sheep with their fur and bones and everything else. And Kumbhakarna just chewed them all up and washed them down with a couple big glasses of straight, you know, cognac, burp. Then he headed over to the palace, you know, said, "What is it? What are you waking up for?" Like that. And Robin told him what had happened, and he was shaking his head. He said, "My dear younger brother, you are such an idiot. You know, first you kidnap the mother of the universe. That's your first first opening hook in the opening scenario here. First you kidnap the mother of the universe, and to finish things off, finish everything off, you declare war on God." Stupid. Kidnap the mother of the universe and declare war on God. Okay, you know. And so Robin had become a little depressed. And Kumbhakarna said, "But don't worry, I'll help you. I'll take care of it. Nobody can defeat me, this and that, you know." But he was thinking, this is pretty doubtful. So then he circumambulated Ravana. Ravana put a garland about him. I guess my dear older brother gave him a garland and an army to go with him. And he went out. He didn't go through the gate. He stepped right over the walls, you know. And this the monkey freaked out. You know, it's like some of them covered their eyes, some of them passed out, some of them started running back to the bridge. And Vibhishan told Ram, he said, "Better tell him real quick. It's a big machine, you know," to kind of get the monkeys calmed down. And then a big battle. And of course, finally Ram was like shooting arrows at Kumbhakarna. He blew off both his legs, and he kept on coming on the stumps. And then finally, I think he cut his head off, yeah, and that blew into the ocean or something and drowned 10,000 oxygenes of monkeys with it or something. Ravana just passed out when he heard it. So finally, they had their duel, and the last day then was that Ravana came out again with the last Rakshasa armies and everything else. And the battle went on like that, and Ravana just, you know, I guess everybody else just stopped fighting, the Rakshasas and the monkey, just all because, hey, wait, watching it. It was unbelievable. And the chariots, Nathalie was sent by Indra from heaven, you know, and he was using all the weapons and everything else like that. The chariot driving was incredible. And Ravana was sending arrows and piercing Ram, and Ram was counteracting them and blasting away at Ravana, but neither one could get the edge, you know. The funny, he cut off his heads, but they kept regrowing. So Vibhishana's hint was there that Ravana had this quantity of Amrit. And as long as he had the Amrit, he couldn't be killed. And then, of course, he then could use his energy to regenerate himself. And he was storing it in his navel. It was his navel, it says. Another place, I think it says his heart. So with that information, then Ram then called for the Brahmastra. And it describes the Brahmastra showed up, and it was made of the essential ultimate reality of the primordial elements of material energy, like that. It was the most essential, you know, cosmogonical weapon you could imagine. And it came up as an arrow. And it was still dripping with blood and fat from his previous victims, like that. So then Ram put the arrow on his bow, and he said, "Oh, now, Robin, I, whose determination never fails, so send you to that place from which you shall not return. You are the worst of the Rakshasas. Indeed, you are like their urine. You kidnap my wife like a dog kidnaps food from the householder when he's not present." Like that. And so they shot the arrow and blasted Ravana into pieces or whatever. He died. And then appointed Vibhishana, like that, you know. And that was the victory of Ram over Ravan. Today is the whole day. And, of course, so many other pastimes after that, you know. But that's the victory. And then very interesting, because the all the monkeys were brought back to life by Indra's potency, and some of them took birth in Ram Lila with Krishna. Of course, Jambavan continues on, and Vida and Vidvida become confused by Banasura's association, I think, and Balaram kills Vidvida. Yeah. So we could all watch out, even personal associates, you know, watch out for getting a bad association, not progressing. They could understand Ram, but they thought Lakshman was some guy who did austerities like them. That's what I understand. They could appreciate God, but not Guru. You know? And then Guru showed them he was just as powerful as God. But the other monkeys, okay, they all took birth as Brajabasis, and then you know, they were getting yogurt from Krishna's hands and playing and participating in Ram and Krishna Lila. So one day, supposedly Mother Yashoda asked, you know, Gopalji, why are you always giving yogurt to the monkeys like that, you know? And he said, oh, because in a previous life, they did so much service for me, and I couldn't give them anything as a reward. But now I'm very rich, and I can give them, you know, a reward. And to see how eagerly they're coming with their own hands to take, you know, to take this yogurt. So Mother Yashoda, one more thing to wonder, who is this child? You know? So, Ram Vijay Otsava Ki Jai. Any other comments about
Maharaj,
victory,
I was gonna
Ram
say,
over Ravan?
Today you have, we understand why you're Hanuman Prasekha, because you delivered
well, why not?
I'm
sure be
Doug,
I'll be Doug.
Jai Ramachandra Ki Jai.
That was wonderful.
Yeah, it was nice. Also, it matches up.
I want to hear it again.
We dug to tell us about hearing it again and again. You know, yeah. And of course, what happens is that if you hear it again and again, then actually, again, Hansaluda told us that Prabhupada said, if you just go on chanting Hare Krishna, you'll see pastimes you never read in any of my books. Yeah. So yeah, these bad things become manifest like that and stuff. Yeah, little words. Yeah, tell great stories. Okay,
I got a question for you, Maharaj. This is
Balabhadra.
Yeah, we know that the battle of Kurukshetra lasted 18 days. How long did the war with Ram last exactly?
We were discussing that yesterday, and we weren't quite sure because there are people who calculate it. You know. I think it wasn't much more than about 7 days, really. Maybe not even that. Because the first day, second day, I think maybe it was about like, you know, 5 days altogether or something.
But when does Hanuman go and burn the place up? Burn up Lanka?
Well, that.
That's before, so
you
can say that.
He came back, and they just kind of got a few hours to get mobilized, this and that. Mm-hmm. They got down there for 1 week. I think it maybe took 3 days to get down there. And for 1 week, I think Ram sat in meditation. Then they invaded. Then after that, I think about 5 days, you know. And so maybe less than altogether, maybe about 12 days from the time you saw Sita to the time she was able to go back and walk into the fire. prove her chastity.
You know, I wanted to add something since today is Ram Vijay, and we get a couple of minutes. We usually go a little longer than this. Hanuman, after Lord Ram, with a Brahmastra weapon, an arrow he received from Agastya Muni that was originally constructed for Indra, that was given to Agastya, he gave it to Ram, and that was the Brahmastra.
Yeah.
And it had the feathers were from Garuda, and the tip was had the Shakti of Agni and in Surya, sun god.
Wow.
And I read where Ravan's armor was his made him invincible. He got it from Brahma, and this Brahmastra was able to pierce that armor.
Wow.
And took his life force right out of his body into the earth.
Wow.
When it struck his chest. So, but Hanuman was sent by Ram after Ravan was slain to the Ashok Grove to deliver the news to Sita and get a message from her. So I've read a number of Ramayans. I'm very careful about the Ramayans I read. I don't want to read stuff that's not true. And Purnaprajna, he takes notes when he studies these Mahabharata or the Ramayana, or he's even done a prose Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and it's just the way he studies, and these books have been published. But anyway, I'm reading something that he's that's online connected with this day. And I came to this one story that I hadn't heard before. And Hanuman's in the Ashok Grove, and he's, these hideous Rakshasis are still there, you know, and he's saying, it would be a pleasure for me to punish these Rakshasis. They've tormented you for a year. You know, give me permission, and I'll, in front of you, I will punish them all. And then Sita says something very interesting. By nature, Sita was very kind to the downtrodden. So she replied, they are only foolish maidservants who had to carry out the orders of the king. Whatever I have suffered was a result of my own misdeeds, and these Rakshasis acted only as instruments in the hands of destiny. And then she says, perhaps you've heard this story. There's an ancient story, and the punchline is, a great man never takes into account the offenses that are committed against him. And and so, what's that?
It's a story about a bear, I think,
Yeah, the bear. And so there's a hunter being chased by a tiger. He climbs a tree. It just happens to be where a bear is, you know, lives. And so the tiger says, this hunter is our common enemy, so you should push him out of the tree so I can eat him. And then the bear replies, this hunter has taken shelter in my home, so I'm not going to do any harm to him. You know, so if I act in that way, it would be very unrighteous. So then the bear went to sleep. So when the tiger saw that, he told the hunter, if you push the bear out of the tree so I can eat him, I promise I won't harm you. So being swayed by the tiger, being afraid of the tiger, the hunter climbed up to the branch the bear was sleeping on, and he pushed him off the branch. But as the bear was falling, he managed to grab another branch and saved himself. So then the tiger, he's very clever, he says to the bear, because this hunter tried to kill you, you should not, you should retaliate by pushing him out of the tree. But even though the tiger appealed to the bear like this, again and again, he refused, saying, a great person never takes into account the sins of one who has offended him. Instead, at all costs, he keeps his vow to never return evil for evil, because he knows that good conduct is the ornament of virtuous persons.
Wow.
It's a great story. Isn't that a great story?
Sita Devi Ki Jai. Yeah. Such an example. Wow. Well, okay, I guess we're going to go ahead and cook some boga offering for Lord Ramachandra now.
Now, don't forget that tomorrow is Ekadashi.
Yes.
Right.
Maharaj, where did that little tidbit of nectar come about the reason that Krishna feeds the monkeys?
Oh, I don't know that one. I don't. I heard it someplace. You know. Let's see. I don't know. Again, I was just. I don't know. Gopal Champur or something like that. I seemed to be reading it. One quick point though is that Vidagra's point is that Purnapragna, his Ramayana, I read it many times. A smaller one. Krishna Dharma is online now. If you go to Vedabase.com, Krishna Dharma's Ramayana is there online. The whole thing. And Mahabharata. But then they were actually, the way that Purnapragna got the Ramayana was, I think he and Bhakti Bikash Maharaj had a translation done, and they both took it, and then Purnapragna wrote his, like, for teenagers, and Bhakti Bikash Maharaj wrote his, and it's very interesting because you can see it was the same basis, but Bhakti Bikash Maharaj goes into a lot more, like, you know, philosophical discussions and stuff like that, you know. Other than that, there was Prabhupada recommended, and the devotees were asking for it. I've got the name now. Some pundit, the name is pretty obvious, and it was in the UC Berkeley library before anything was translated like that. He said it was something, some Shastri maybe, Hari Prasad Shastri. I think it may be Hari Prasad Shastri. And it's a very authentic translation like that. And there was a Gita Press Valmiki Ramayana, which I saw.
Right.
Which if anybody can get a hold of, if you see them on sale online, my God, probably just buy it up because it's been out of print. But other than that, there's so many Adhyatmika Ramayans, and some of them have, like you say, Mayavadi content. And there's Ramcharitmanas of Tulsidas, which probably seeing as, you know, some things were added, you know, poets' interpretation.
Yeah, he's changed some of the stories.
Yeah.
Chelsea does.
Yeah. But it probably was at a Ramayana glorification organized by one lady, and he said people have been saying this is Ramayana, but it is actually poets' imagination. He put it like that in terms of the humor of how we deal with it. You know, he wasn't really, you know, forceful about it.
Tulsi never meant to actually write a Ramayana. It's the ocean of Rams. What is the translation of that? Ramasritmanas. It's a It's a devotional. It's the only Hindi classic in literature. It's very well. He was a world class musician. That thing is sung in temples all over India.
But
it's a summary or his devotional glorification of Ram. That's basically what it is.
There something like, well, I forget how many hundreds of different Ramayans, and, or you know, we call it things like that, things taken from it. In Thailand, it's called Shri is Fat. So it's Fat Ram. It's a whole story, but it's all mixed up with local prime ministers and stuff like that. You know? And so many versions of Ramayana available. Online, I don't know where it is, there's one, it's in Hindi, but has very, very good artwork. It's not the Japanese collaboration, but it's another one. And very, very beautiful artwork and good story. And if you know the storyline, you can follow and actually even pick up on your Hindi then. You know. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, I'll get to you later.
Thank you, Maharaj. All glory to your service.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Bye.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.